Hey friends, welcome to the Talk Copy to Me podcast. Here we empower small business owners to step into the spotlight with their marketing and messaging. I'm your host, Erin Alilla. Let's get started and talk copy. Hello, friends. Today, I am so fortunate to be joined by my friend and fellow copywriter, Nadine Nethery. You may know her for everything that she does, helping people understand how to gain insights about their own audiences and the copy that they should use to craft their website. But what you may not know about Nadine, and I'm going to tell you right now, is that she previously worked as a translator with the German and English languages, traveling the world in the auto industry. And she'd go to motor shows and fancy product launches. Tell me everything about this.
Yeah, it's like every copywriter I find gets into copywriting via some detour. So
yeah,
you could probably pick up from accent. I am originally from Germany, so I'm at the halfway mark. I'm just beyond 40. So I've lived in Australia for 20 odd years and grew up my first 20 years in Germany, hence the accent I can't shake. I have always had a thing for languages. So I'm a translator by trade and used to freelance for a while, translating all sorts of fun things and TV shows, the Viking, things like that. When I moved to Australia, I started working for a German automotive brand. We needed someone who could do the juggle of English and German. And I got into automotive PR and traveled the world to all sorts of fun and fancy places, luxury hotels, took Australian automotive journalists over there who went nuts over all the fancy cars. And yeah, so it was quite a cool lifestyle, pre-kids. And then,
I was going to say, quite different now to settling into this copywriting lifestyle.
That's right. I went from, lifestyle, business class flights to now being in my copy cape most days, which I actually prefer, I have to say.
It's so funny because when we started talking about this, one word that stood out, which I was not even thinking in our pre-chat or before this, was the word translate. And, you know, I think what I'm really excited for you to talk about on the show is kind of gaining audience insight. But if you think about it, that's kind of what you're doing. You're translating what your audience would think or say and using those words within your copy. So, like, again, I'm piecing things together here, but it's kind of what you're doing when you're looking for audience insights and trying to learn what it is that they need and they want.
Yeah, absolutely. And picking up those nuances as well. Because words have got very distinct meanings and evolve certain feelings as well. So it's really working with the right words at the right time and plugging them into all the right places.
Which I hope we cover today, because that's the tough part, right? Is knowing I think people know that audience insight is so important, like, you know, voice of customer research. And I think they get that. But I think sometimes there's this gap between, like, okay, I've captured insight, or I plan to capture this information about my audience, but what do I actually do with it? You know, so today we're going to be talking, I should probably say, like, within the lens of how to use this on your website specifically. But before we do that, so I don't discourage anyone, know that you can absolutely use your voice of customer research and any audience research that you're doing in other places, like social media, like sales pages, like emails. Like, you should be using them in these places. But if by chance Nadine and I happen to go down the road where we're talking specifically about maybe website pages or sections of pages, just know that we do encourage you to kind of follow the same guide that we're talking about. It doesn't change much. But if we focus on website pages, know that you can absolutely gather this research and use it elsewhere. And you should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, so many opportunities come from research beyond the copy even. You know all about it. So just sparking ideas and even new products, new offers, new services, all the things. But that's probably going a bit far in this context.
So let me ask you a question. What made you excited to start to do more audience research? Like, within your copywriting career, what made you go into the road, not so often traveled, to really research about your audience and your clients' audiences, I should say, so that you can write better copy for your own clients?
Yeah, the funny thing is copywriting is often associated with being creative and just coming up with fancy statements and pulling stuff out of thin air, which I find couldn't be further from the truth. Obviously, you have to be somewhat creative. You have a flair for words, but the secret really is joining your audience's feedback, their words, their emotions with your zone of genius. So you as the client, as the business owner, and really marrying those in a way that gets you that instant nod when people read the copy and it makes them feel deeply. It really resonates with them. It makes them feel like, you know, inside out, and you're speaking to, you know, their daily struggles and all the things that they want fixed, solved in their business or in their lives. And very early on, you know, when you start out as a copywriter and you try your best, you know, before you've done all the right courses and all the right things to go, that's how it works. I just quickly worked out that really going to the source and asking my customers or my clients' audience made such a huge difference to how the copy landed, to the conversion rates, even to the feedback they received from their clients. And they would no longer, you know, waste time on discovery calls. It helped them be much more prepared for those discovery calls that actually landed, because they really resonated with their message. And it just really made everything a lot more strategic, a lot more targeted to their dream customer.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because I would echo that 100%. Like, we as writers, I think, are imagine to be like slaving over a computer and sitting down and just like furiously writing near notebook. And I don't do that at all. I think I save most of the writing until very close to the time that I'm actually delivering the copy, because I spend more time researching and ruminating on the research that I have collected to determine what to say. And I think that's always kind of been such an eye opener for so many clients is, you know, we'll talk about like timelines or things like that. Like, well, when can I expect to look at a draft, or when should we strategize what goes on the page? And the research takes a good portion of the time, you know, whether that is because you're doing something like sending surveys and you have to wait to get them completed and then organized and then interpreted. Or if you're doing client interviews and you're doing a similar process that I just mentioned, that takes a while, you know? And I think, like you're saying, I'm literally echoing everything that you've said. I think what you're saying is it's like, that's where you do find out, though, actually what they care about. Because, you know, without audience insight, you're just guessing. I can't tell you how many leads or clients I've talked to and I'll say, tell me about your clients. And then I'll ask them, what you've explained, is this your most recent clients? Like, are these the people you like to work with? And a lot of the times it boils down to either they're describing someone like themselves at a different point in time, or they're guessing at what they think that their clients need. And that can be dangerous. That's where you mention a lot of the times people will read and review a website and feel repelled or turned off by something if it's just not acknowledging what their actual needs are.
Yeah. And, you know, everyone is going to sound the same. If you stick with your assumptions and your opinions, that's why so many, you know, weddings, websites, coaching websites all sound the same. They use the same words. It's all top line. It's all generic, like up-leveling, empowering.
Any word that annoys you is because it's been overused. Exactly. Because people are copying each other.
Yeah, and it doesn't really mean anything. It's so airy-fairy. So if you can turn those airy-fairy words into tangible expressions that people actually use and that mean something to your clients, it is going to make everything so much more powerful and stick.
And I think with that sticking, it also gives them the confidence, right? Because what I find a lot of my clients is, you know, especially when I have a client who's so excited to publish the website copy, they'll say like, I just want to share my website with everyone. And that I think people listening might say, oh, I don't feel the same. Or if they do, yes, I celebrate you. But I hear that so often, like, I'm nervous to send my website. I haven't updated it in so long, as if it's a point of shame. Yeah, I think once you've built this website where you know the research was done well, you know that it's going to land, it gives you so much more confidence within your own business and your own marketing to want to keep pushing forward into a new level because you feel good about it.
Yeah, and that's the whole point. You know, you're investing in graphic design to do your branding and a web design. So it's a big investment. And
agreed.
For that to fall flat simply because you haven't done the groundwork and the research, can be heartbreaking. But doing the groundwork and doing all the digging before putting it up there really makes all the difference.
So we're going to just jump right in. How do you do audience intel? Like, how do you get audience intel and how do you do this research?
Yeah, so there's various options. Let's assume you have been in business for a while, so you have clients to your name. I would absolutely incorporate very strategic questions into your onboarding and offboarding process. And that means you don't have to bug your customers, 3 months after working with them to go back, oops, forgot to ask you about a project, do you mind? So if it's ingrained in your onboarding and offboarding processes, it is in the moment, it is raw, it is live. And that means as you go along and as you have those different emotions and different experiences working with you, you're gathering that intel, basically on autopilot as part of the process. If you haven't done that, if you want to rehash, you can absolutely send out a strategic survey to the fact. And it's very important to really take them on that journey. So to help them relive the journey, what was going on in their business or in their life before they approached you, what made you stand out along the way? So what made you different to all the other copywriters, graphic designers, you name it. Then the immediate wins from working with you. So that excitement of launching the website, and then very important as well. So those tangible wins came from it, and whether they're emotional, financial, increased leads and increased conversions, whatever that might be like. But that really helps you piece together testimonials for your website, which you know all about. But it also helps you then to pick those amazing expressions, words and statements that are so good that you can literally often copy and paste them into headings, subheadings, bullet point lists of things that are bugging people or things people want to change in their lives. And so doing that strategically is the emphasis here is the key, and then actually sitting down and looking through the data and picking those amazing standout statements and really reading between the lines how you can then incorporate that in the website and all the other places in your marketing.
You know, so much of what you just said, I want to comment on. One of which is that you said you could copy and paste it into your website. And it's funny you mentioned this because I actually just worked with a client about 2 weeks ago doing some copy coaching. So they were working on most of their own copy and they had hired me to edit and audit and review and guide them. And we had finally got some survey results back from their audience and we were reviewing it together to talk about what could they use. And someone had said something so clearly in a fun way. And I said, oh, there's a great heading. And my client was worried that it was like plagiarizing. And I was like, no, plagiarizing is a problem. We would never want to steal like our own client's words and use them in a way that they didn't allow us to. But if your client is filling out a survey and they're giving you insight and they have agreed that you can use this insight for your own like marketing materials or anything, use it, because there are other people who are going to be longing for the same thing or looking for the same thing or using those words to do a Google search, right? Yeah. So many people tell me, oh, I do a lot of SEO research. How? That's my favorite question, because you're going into SEO research with your own assumptions. If you haven't done audience research, you cannot do your SEO research because, I mean, you can, but you're still doing it from an assumptions-based research. So if you have these details from your clients and you know how they speak and how they search and what they'd say and would not say, it's benefiting all of the things you said, like testimonials, but other things too, that they're investing their money in, you know, like the SEO efforts. But the one key part that I want to stay on is the fact that you said the way you're strategic is the analyzation, right? Like we wouldn't just pull any old words into our headings and our subheads or anything like that. We have to make sure that the ones that we're using are actually important to the leads, not the way that our current clients would say it, but the state that they were in when they were considering hiring you.
Yeah, exactly. It needs to be highly relevant to the person you want to work with. That's why it's important as well to not just survey anyone, you know, your family, friends, you know, business buddies. They're not necessarily your ideal customer. So their opinion is ranked differently to sending a survey out to, let's say, you know, business owning women on their path to seven figures. Just a bad example, but couldn't think of anything better. But, you know, like it's very specific. So you need to really survey the people you want to work with and who are perfectly positioned to invest in your services and get the best outcomes.
Yeah. And I think it's key to mention here that, you know, we talk about surveying your audience or your clients. Sometimes if you're shifting your business, it is actually beneficial to survey people outside of your audience and your specific clients. Hopefully they're in your own network, so the survey part is easy enough to do. You could ask other people in your network, do you know someone, and describe the type of person you'd like to interview or survey, who would be willing to answer a few questions? Because you want to make sure, again, that you're getting the quality data from the right people. So if you're shifting your audience, you'll have to also shift who's answering the surveys.
Absolutely. I actually worked with a client recently who started off as a bookkeeper. And she did really well, fully booked, but wanted more time with her kids and, you know, lift her rides, and it really tap into her expertise. So she came from corporate accounting and wanted to move into the CFO space. So rather than audience surveying your her existing bookkeeping clients, because none of them really were in a position to invest and step up to that next level, we posted a strategic survey. You know, business community. So I'm part of a female business women community. So I posted the survey in there. She posted it in similar communities that she was a part of. And how we structured that survey, because obviously they're not her existing clients, we had conditional questions in there. So really to find out messaging gaps that we had to close, different even perceptions of CFOs. So we started with a very pointy question, you know, whether they'd worked with a CFO or are currently working with a CFO, whether they were potentially considering working with someone, or whether they had never heard of a CFO and had no idea what it was. And then based on their response, we branched out the survey into a different set of questions. It was so interesting to see the different perceptions, the false beliefs as well around CFOs, what they do, how they can support you. We also had one extra question around price point. So it was interesting to see the big, you know, gap. So people who didn't have a clue obviously were much lower than people who had worked with a CFO and got those amazing results. So being strategic, again, with your survey and really having a think about the structure before you send it out is so super powerful and can really, again, help you with your marketing strategy, you know, your pre-launch content to work out the messaging gaps and those objections that need to be overcome because you're ready before you're ready to pivot, buzzword, your business to that next niche. So even, you know, if you don't have existing clients to survey, it is such a worthy exercise to do just to give you the confidence and direction and clarity how to show up.
Yeah, I agree. We've talked a lot about surveys specifically, but do you ever decide that you want to do interviews instead of surveys? And if so, is there like a specific reason that helps you make that decision?
I usually start with a survey and then I quickly pick up people who completed just to tick a box, or people who are genuinely coming forward with super generous angles and insights. So I usually pick a few different angles and interesting perspectives that I want to explore further, then book calls based on that. So really to explore different avenues and interesting angles that I might not have considered in my strategy to date.
Yeah, and I do the same exact thing. I didn't at first, to be honest with you. Before, I would skip the survey and I would go straight to interviews, and I would only do a survey if I felt like I didn't get the information I needed from the interviews. But I found that they were very limiting because, again, who is picking the interviewees? It's the client. And they may choose to pick their clients that they liked the best, or their clients that were more vocal about positive things, But I often found clients that were willing to be more honest were, even if they weren't extremely positive, were more helpful because there could be things that they said that I could adjust maybe within the copy. So I wouldn't write obviously something that seemed a little negative, but I would then be able to take that to my client and say like, so how is your delivery time? Like, you know, like one of the things that was mentioned was that, that someone was a little concerned about delivery time. And then the client may say something to the effect of, I'm so glad you say that because now we have this process and it's a proven process. And that might have been something we didn't talk about between me and my client, which is a huge selling factor when you can present things such as frameworks and processes and methods for doing things. It sets you up to be more of the expert. So I think that that was kind of the big shift for me when I started finding out that there were insights that I was missing. I went straight to survey first. And then, like you mentioned, there's always, I do find it remarkable that there's always a few survey respondents that share something that you would not have assumed. And then it's, that's who I will always go to first. Yeah. You know, like there's always going to be an easy client who is willing to like step in and share praise. And those are great for their own reasons, but I do really like to find those random, I wouldn't say strangers in this case, but random people that you that surprise you a little, because that's where I think you get a lot of the good insight about your audience from.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, often when I present my list, oh, let's talk to these people. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. I wouldn't have picked them. And I said, yeah. Well, I've picked them because X, Y, Z. Makes sense. It's, different angles, different perspectives, interesting takes on things. That just made me curious.
Yeah. And I'd love to know how you go about convincing people to do this, because this is something that I think we have to adjust for a copywriter specifically, have to adjust their approach depending on the client and the client's business, you know. But when it comes to enticing their clients to actually complete a survey, do you have any methods that you found to be easier than others? You know, I think that one easy thing that most people will say is, oh, well, we could enter you to win a gift certificate or a discount, which is fine. There's nothing against that. But I don't think it's always necessary. And I find that there are some other creative ways that you can get people to participate. So I don't know if you have any suggestions for like how to encourage people to actually complete these things.
I do like the gift certificate or, you know, little hamper that you give away, depending on your audience, obviously. But what's worked really well lately is even a donation to their favorite charity. So that has been popular. And when it comes to response rates in general, I find brands who have a very active and engaged community get a lot higher uptake. And then sometimes clients who are going will have hundreds of responses because we've got, you know, really good results for clients. They're the ones that then struggle and are quite surprised at the lack of response. So it's really important to not only check in with your customers and with your clients when you need something from them. So really, you know, keep checking in with them as well. So it's not that, oh my God, now she wants something, she checks in with us. So keep that conversation going with your clients beyond surveys and wanting favors, which I find then gets them convinced, you know, it easily sway to actually complete that survey.
Yeah. And I think that's also when it comes to the strategy behind the survey, which you might be able to speak of, because I know you actually have an entire product that you sell in your shop for people who are looking to do this on their own, not just when they hire you to do this. But is there a certain length that surveys should be so that people don't feel like, you know, they have to take a standardized test in order to complete these things? And, you know, any specific approach that they should use when sharing the survey with their audience?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's tempting to add extra questions. I have that so often where I present the survey just as a final check to my clients. Can we just add this question? And I've always been wondering this. So the more questions you add in, the more annoyed people get. So you need to set very clear expectations. How many questions are waiting for them? I wouldn't go beyond 10, to be honest. That would be my maximum. But yeah, set the expectations. So, you know, it'll take you roughly 5 minutes. I've got 10 questions for you. And really set the expectations, like what is in it for them to complete this survey. So really make them feel great to be handpicked to complete this survey, and also showcase that anything they share with you will ultimately help them in the future if they choose to work with you again, because it helps you improve your business, your processes, and really shift how you serve your clients in the future. So rather than just stopping a survey, it's really about feel part of something special and part of your journey. That tends to get really good buy-in.
Yeah, I always try to remind my clients, and this I preach this a lot in my testimonials course, but I try to remind my clients that like people want to help people, bottom line. It's the reason that it doesn't happen is that there's not often an easy route for them to do it. So like if you're able to share a survey that could be done very quickly, you know, you've got that one click out of an email until you can click into a few answers or type out a few answers. Not that you're going to a website and then the website moves you to the survey and then each survey page, you know, takes like two clicks to move through.
Yeah.
If you make it easy for them, they're going to want to help you. Like, unless there was a bad client experience, and obviously in that case, we should not be asking clients that maybe didn't have the best experience to complete things like this, which I have had people do. And I was like shocked when I stepped on an interview call once and person was desperate to tell me their experience. And I was like, I think this is more of a therapy session than this is an audience intel session. Well, you know, hey, stranger things have happened. But I think that when we ask for help from our audience and our community, like people really do want to give you that feedback. So it's really just about making it as easy as possible for them. And they will step up and share those things.
Exactly. One creative way as well, it really depends on how many survey responses you need, is sending a personal video message as well, inviting them to complete a survey. So I personally use Bonjoro for that. So you can record a little personal message and then have linking straight through the survey. Or if they open it on desktop, you can even embed the Google form right underneath the video. So again, making it super easy and adding that personal touch. So explain, you know, face to face what's in it for them, and that you would be super grateful if they take 2 minutes of their time. So just be authentic, genuine, and really set the scene, set the expectations up front.
Yeah, and do it, which is like the biggest advice. Like, do the audience research, because I think that, again, it is normal to feel anxious about asking for people's help. It is normal to feel like you don't want to bother people with things like this. But again, you're not bothering them. Everyone has their own ability to make the choice whether they're going to help you or not. Even if they choose no, that might have nothing to do with you. It could be they forgot. I forget everything. Okay, guys, I forget everything. They could have forgotten. They could have been too busy that week. But if you don't ask, you will quite literally never know, in this case, especially when it comes to audience, and you're going to be stuck with your audience assumptions. So put yourself out there and make it a point to make this something that you do regularly in your business, not too often, but regularly enough that if there are any service changes or product changes or audience changes, that it feels natural to go back and say, hey, would you mind, you know, answering a couple of questions for me?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it just keeps your messaging fresh as well, and keeps all the things that are happening in the world, you know, in the bigger picture as well. Because let's face it, research that you did half a year ago might look very different nowadays with recessions and all the things happening. So your messaging is never finished. Your copy is never finished. It really needs to shift as your audience evolves as well.
Agreed. All right, so we've put the surveys out there. Let's talk about this world that exists, imaginary world, where we have sent out surveys and we have received results. You mentioned that we need to be strategic with analyzation. So how does someone sit down in the right mind frame to analyze the results? Or what should they be looking for before they can even use those results to know that they're getting the right quality and the right type of answers from their audience?
I don't know. So I organize intel into buckets, as I like to call them. So, you know, nothing fancy, just a spreadsheet that I organize into pain points, objections, false beliefs, because they, you know, hold people back, objections, sticky terms, as I like to call them. So these are the statements that are just so good, you can copy and paste them. Things about them. So if it's an existing client survey, so things that make them different from everyone else. And then also testimonials. So usually there's one question in there. Like, if you had to sum up four sentences, what it means to work with me, then this could be it. So along the way, I just add to those buckets and pick up themes as well. So if a certain word pops up all the time, I will highlight that and keep track of it. And so I go through all the different survey responses, sort it into little buckets, and then sort of rank it by into a little hierarchy. So what the order stand out, and come up with the messaging structure from there. So usually before I catch up clients for the strategy session that we have to kick off our project, I already have gone through their audience research, and that gives me the perfect opportunity to see how clear they are on their audience. Because often, as we said, it's based on assumptions. They have actually never surveyed their audience before, and it really brings up so many moments. So often, their perceived point of difference that they've been marketing to and speaking to in all their messaging couldn't be further from their actual point of difference and why people choose them. And it's really bringing them on board with the strategy, with the messaging that I have in mind. And yeah, those kickoff strategy sessions often come with so many aha moments and so many shifts and so many, oh my God, I didn't know I get all this with the copy, because it just makes things fall into place and really helps them understand their audience on a whole new level. So the funny thing is, you know, when you first talk about audience researching, okay, cool, let's just do this survey. And then it happens. And that is where the magic lies. And oh, now I understand. And I'm so going to keep doing it, because it is so powerful.
Which in your case, that's the best way to start a working relationship, because you prove your customer experience right from the get-go. Like, you prove the value you're bringing to your clients by showcasing what their audience says, feels, and thinks about them. So it's easy for them to like immediately just be in a good place when they're working with you, because you're showing that you understand, you know, what they need and how to get there based on the research that's actually been done. So if someone have their results, they've done some analyzation themselves, and they maybe feel good about certain terms or certain messages, how do they then take that, though, and translate that to the website page? Do you have suggestions on, let's say, maybe starting page by page and saying, okay, I have a homepage. Let me go and search through my best research for messages for the homepage. Okay, now I'm on the about page. Or would you do a completely opposite approach and maybe take the research and then place it on pages as you go through them?
I would go and place it into the copy as I go through. So so it evolves organically, because, as you know, every page has got a structure and has got story arc and, you know, leading up to that call to action that you want them to take. So it's really going with the flow and seeing how you take the reader on that journey, and then coming up with those bullet point lists that speak to transformation or address pain points, and really, picking and choosing. That's a good thing about audience research. Going back to your spreadsheet, going, okay, cool. So we need to really talk to the transformation, you know, comes from working with me. Where are we looking? You know, what transformation are we looking at? And then the beauty is you have all these tangible wins. And it just means no matter where you are in your copy on your website, you can simply refer back to it to take the best ideas.
Which I think is why it's also very important to know strategically what pages you have and what you're going to say on the pages, either before or during the time that this survey is happening, right? The questions that you're asking through the survey may be some more standard questions and in gaining their insight. But if you're not thinking about how that will kind of transition to the page, then you're going to be lost when it comes time to match them together. So part of it is doing this audience research, and at the same time, sitting down and doing your site structure research. You know, what pages do you want? How do you want to position those pages? And I think it'll be so much easier at that point, because then you have both sets of data. And it's really just kind of like cutting and pasting, right? If you think about like a craft project as like a kid or even as an adult, right? If you're going to make a collage or something, you're taking your client's words, you're taking your own words and you're just kind of adjusting until you get that pretty picture that you're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. And same goes for the page structure as well. So, you know, let's say you pick up a lot of objections around it. You know, you need to make sure you've got an FAQ section on your service page to help them address those. Or if your audience coming back to you about your values and the way you show up, is it worth having a section on your about page that really calls out, you know, your brand promise and your values and how they play into your offer? So it's picking up, again, the themes and the things that are really important to your audience and how you can package them in a way that they're super crystal clear to pick up for potential leads who want to work with you and really turn into that, you know, awesome selling position, because it's just, yeah, in tune with who you are, your zone of genius, and why people write you.
Yeah, and I think it's also being open to the, you know, having some wiggle room maybe for the things you might not have known could be there. I love that you said FAQs, because it brought to mind how FAQs are almost always assumption-based, right? And I love frequently asked questions. I do. They have so much value. But one person pointed out to me that I had worked with, they said, to be honest, Erin, and it was they had so much shame when they were saying this. They're like, to be honest, Erin, no one has actually asked me these questions, but I know that they're probably wondering them. And I was like, yes. Yes, you have permission to use these as like frequently asked questions, everyone, is just a title. Let's just put that out there. Let's just call them questions for the conversation that we're having. But if you have a survey and you're getting results where people maybe, if we're talking back to the question of like, where were you? Like, what were you dealing with before you decided to work with whatever business it is that you're doing the survey for? Those types of things that come up within those questions might give you some insight to frequently asked questions. So maybe you've done your page plans, you've done your site structure, and you don't even think of having a frequently asked questions page on one of your services pages, let's say. Well, if you find these same things keep coming up throughout your audience survey, that's how you know it's important to add one. So I think the flexibility of either removing something from your website architecture plan that just doesn't need to be said, or adding something that you might find value of within your survey result is really important too. Like, strategy will always be first in my heart, but strategy needs to bend with the information that you have. So if you get really quality good research, you're going to have to bend your strategy to make sure that the data, the true data, it works with the strategy you're building.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, even website templates, there's a place for templates to get you started and to get you thinking, but they're not set in concrete. So you have to be proactive and, you know, question things. As in, does this apply to my business? Does it really add value, or is it lacking something? So, you know, always start with the data and your audience. Your audience basically does the heavy lifting for you, let's face it.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, audiences out there.
Thank you, people, for doing our job. It's just a matter of giving them the space to open up and come forward with the information and then knowing how to use it.
Yeah, I've had clients ask me before, like, well, how do you do this? Like, how do you, Erin, do this? And I'm like, I don't want to trivialize the work that I do, but here's what I do. I ask good questions and then I listen carefully. And then I take the answers and I share them with you. Like, again, it's not trivializing the effort that we're putting in, but it really is about making sure that the questions are good that you're asking and listening carefully to the answers, because people will always share with you if you're encouraging them to. And it's just being a good listener, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And reading between the lines. Sometimes,
yes.
You know, they give you a hint, and then if you are able to dig deeper and go to the next level, the answer is basically there.
Yeah, one thing we didn't mention that I should say quickly that I don't do all the time. Now I'm kind of questioning maybe if I should, but one thing I did once was I had a client who's really struggling with not putting every question they could possibly ever ask on a survey. So we really culled it down to a very short survey, but the final answer was, if I have a question based on your responses, may I follow up via email? Because they didn't want to do like one-on-one video interviews with their clients. It wasn't the right audience for something like that. And we did. We followed up quite a bit with additional questions. And I think actually that was really helpful because it's how you mentioned kind of reading between the lines. There were things that we were really hoping people could expand on, and people replied right back, right away, quick, like something that could be done in a sentence or two. So not that I know that that is the best approach for everyone, but, you know, to give yourself that wiggle room might be helpful.
Yeah, idea. Because again, sometimes it's just that one follow-up question to go even further.
And again, I have no data on this. It was a one-time experience, everyone, but I thought I would share it. Nadine, before we let you go, I have the final question. And that is, if based on our conversation, if you could share one small homework assignment with my audience, what would it be?
Yeah, actually sending survey and looking at it. That's how easy it is, because we all have huge to-do lists and audience research. For some reason, as much as we know it's important, it always goes to the back burner. So I actually have a freebie on my website, which makes it super, super simple. It's actual questions that I use in my one-on-one client surveys. There's 10 of them. You can swipe them, plug them into your favorite survey tool, and you can start gathering data and having those aha moments for yourself. So what I want you to do, send that survey, put away some time to actually look at the responses, and then see how you can implement that in your copy, in various places, in your marketing to really have the impact.
Yes, absolutely. I think, like you said, it's sometimes we just have to do it. So this is a great push to be able to get out there and do it. All right, Nadine, thank you so much for being here today. Everyone, we will be back next week where we're going to talk about research again. But instead of your audience research, we will be here to talk about competitor research. So don't forget to join us back here on the show next week. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Talk Copy to Me. If you enjoyed spending your time with me today, I would be so honored if you could subscribe to the show and leave a review. Want to continue the conversation? Head on over to Instagram and follow me at Erin Olilla. Until next time, friends.